Hey, we're Amy and Christina, two friends who got pregnant around the same time, started an Instagram to vent about how much we didn't know, and realized there were a ton of you out there who felt the exact same way.
Who'd have thought? Not us. But once we realized we weren't the only ones frantically Googling things at 3 a.m., we thought, why not take it up a notch?
And here we are with a podcast. We're bringing in the experts on all things pregnancy, parenting, and women's health because, let's be real, we're all just trying to survive this journey.
So whether you're here for the real talk, expert advice, or just need some adult conversation between diaper changes, we got you. Welcome to the What I Wish I Knew podcast. Thanks for being part of our growing community. Well, hi, Rebecca. Thanks for being here on the first episode of What I Wish I Knew podcast. We are so honored to have you.
Thank you so much for having me on. I cannot believe I am the first guest. It is an enormous honor. I'm feeling very, very excited.
Well, we love you very much and everything that you do. Can you tell our listeners a little bit of the story of how you got here? You're a pediatrician, you're a mom, you are a author of two books now, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yes, I can. It's been a whirlwind. But yeah, a little bit about me. My name's Rebecca Diamond. I am a pediatrician, mom, author, and my whole journey really started by being a pediatrician first. So I was in pediatric residency 6 years ago, well, over 6 years ago now when my daughter was born. And, you know, not to start on a bummer note, but man, was pregnancy and postpartum hard, like more than I even could have imagined. And I am pretty cynical and imagined it was going to be really hard. And sure, I was a resident, so that didn't help. But I was also a pediatrician and thought I kind of knew what to do and knew what was supposed to happen and knew what was safe and had good resources. You know, I had so many more resources than so many people. And I was just like drowning. I really felt that way. I felt like I had no confidence in any decision I was making, which is ridiculous because I was like a very smart, like confident pediatrician who was good with kids and good at managing stressful things. That was my whole job. But there was just no infrastructure for me to have this sense of like, okay, here's what's safe. Here are some options of what I can do. Why don't I just make decisions on my own and feel really good about them? And that just kind of, I felt like, didn't exist in the parenting space. There was just this constant erosion of confidence. There was either misinformation or unrealistic information. There was all this stress. Some of it was reasonable to be stressed, but some of it just felt sort of like someone is intentionally trying to make this hard. We're really overcomplicating things and missing some of the key things in the meantime. So that started this whole parenting journey where I wrote my first book, Parent Like a Pediatrician, really just trying to give the advice I wish I had had, permission to do the things that I knew were safe, get a little bit more information about the things I wasn't sure about, just feel good as a parent. It was very therapeutic. I highly recommend writing a book if you need to feel some healing about whatever journey you've been on. But you know, that it was really an amazing experience and really helped me, honestly, when I had my own child. So now I have two daughters, and it's been really funny the second time around with my youngest. I'll get into these situations where I'm feeling that self-doubt or I'm feeling that like, everyone is telling me that this is bad. Everyone's telling me that this other thing is bad. And I'm like, you wrote a chapter on that. Like, you can remember, like, you did research, you have a chapter, you can read it. You can feel good about it. So that's my main first book journey. And my second book is kind of picking right up where the first one leaves off, which is the toddler years. You know, initially I was sort of like, well, what is there to write in a toddler book? Like, there's a toilet training book out there if you want to do that. There's probably a tantrum guide out there. But I found even with the toddler years, I was still kind of overwhelmed. And it was strange because it didn't feel like maybe there were as many like day-to-day urgent decisions. Like, am I going to, you know, oh, they're due for this vaccine. Oh, I have to choose a crib. I have to choose a car seat. What am I doing for feeding? Like, it may not have been that sort of pace of rapid fire decision making, But still, the information was out there that was really eroding some common sense. You know, there's a parenting script that told me famously during the height of the pandemic, a story I share of when my daughter slapped me in the face that I was a bad mom. Well, she was had a tantrum. It's fine. But I, you know, they told me I was a bad mom because I said, you hurt my feelings, you know, like, or when I said, good job, that was bad. Or there was just all this advice out there that I was thinking like, well, there needs to be something. There needs to be some guidance on different types of play, on different types of toilet training, on sleep issues, on all that stuff. But it's still so black and white. And it's still so much noise out there. How do I kind of use what I've learned from my first book writing and also from being online a lot and talking to parents and being a mom myself? How do I use that to get toddler information out there? So it's a very long way to say that parents, I am like so in it with you. I've been through the toddler years. I'm about to go through them again. I've been out there on the internet. It's a bit of a disaster. But I feel really strongly that and passionate about these books because I think they're going to let you kind of access that inner voice that you have. And ultimately I think that's really, really what's missing in today's parenting.
I love that. I love the like empowerment angle of it. I couldn't find what I needed or what I was finding wasn't making me feel good or empowered or confident or anything. And so like, I'm going to do something about it. And you did. And you wrote two fantastic books. That I think that's incredible. I'm curious when you're talking about particularly your first book, I would say, was there anything when you were researching it and putting it together and like trying to figure out what you wanted to say in it that changed your mind about things that you thought you knew about or like that you learned and you're like, oh, I always thought that it was supposed to be this way, but now that I'm digging into it, that's not true at all.
There were so many. I don't even know where to begin, but it really was, you know, I love pediatricians. I am a pediatrician. But the type of training we get really is limited in the same way anyone's training is limited. It's based on the science we have, the data that we have, the common sense, the biology to create sort of these best practice guidelines. But the evidence that they have can be a lot less than we think it is. And it can also just not be what's practical. And so I had been, you know, before my oldest daughter was born, reciting these best practices and these checklists and this is exactly what the gold standard is, without really understanding if there was data behind it, how much, what you could do to modify it, if you had a different preference or a different style. And you get some of that in training from these expert, like supervising doctors. I had some great supervisors who taught me like, no, parents actually do this. Like, this is actually how parents sleep. So we're going to counsel based on that. And that was really formative. But it wasn't until I started engaging in this like really in-depth practical research, mixing that with my practice, with my talking to families, that I just had totally new approaches completely. I have 1,000 examples. Right now, I'm very enmeshed in an extremely controversial topic of safe sleep that's been going on. It could not be hotter. And I knew it was going to be controversial when I put it in my book. I ended up saying, to try to give a very brief summary, that standard of practice, putting your baby in a bassinet by themselves on their back is the safest that we know. However, because I was able to do so much research on it and also have so much lived experience and experience with thousands of other moms online and hundreds in the world, I know that this isn't what's happening. And so I started researching what I call a harm reduction approach, meaning you should always strive to do the absolute safest thing. But if you're in a situation where that might not happen, you should know if there are ways you can mitigate risk, because otherwise you'll end up in the least safe situation, which is falling asleep on a chair, couch, fluffy bed, holding your baby, which is when most cases of SIDS actually happen. So it's a lot of preamble, but it's kind of necessary to understand that my framework completely changed by engaging in this conversation. I couldn't have imagined myself ever even uttering this kind of phrase or anything close to it in my clinical practice. And now in my daily practice, I do this. This is how I train people. It's what I wrote in my book. It's what I do in daily life. It's what I've incorporated into my own practice. Again, still striving for by the book sleep. But I recently shared kind of an excerpt and a little more context about this online. And a few pediatricians, in fact, just couldn't really process it. There's such a cognitive dissonance, and really came personally and attacked me. And it was this moment of like, we have to be better about being in conversation with each other and with parents. And to your point of what changed when I started listening to parents and also engaging a little more in the research and talking to experts and just being more open-minded, literally everything changed.
You took that same approach to breastfeeding, I remember, which is like, there's enough research to indicate that like the benefits of breastfeeding from a nutritional standpoint, from a bonding standpoint, all these things. However, the acknowledgement that breastfeeding isn't always the best choice for the parents. And you have to weigh their needs too and say like, yes, I still recommend breastfeeding for all of these reasons, and that is scientifically based and da 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 da. And if you're not going to breastfeed, like, here's the information about that too, and that's okay.
Right.
Your child is going to be fine. Realistically, not everyone can breastfeed for whatever reason. But I like that. I like that approach too. And it's kind of all throughout the books is like what you were saying. There's always science to back up what needs to happen or what the recommendations are, but there's also the reality of how humans live and what that looks like. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's just like so, that's so true. I mean, it sounds stupid to say out loud, well, there's the real world. Like when we have recommendations, if someone is giving you a recommendation that assumes that it's going to work for everyone, that can't be a good recommendation, regardless of if it's a scientific recommendation of this is the only way to do something, not this is the ideal, or this is the ideal and here are some steps to modify. But if this is the end all be all, or if it's a parenting expert who has really helpful strategies and tools, but tells you these are the words you have to use to talk to your child, you have to say this exact parenting script in the situation, that doesn't make any logical sense, because there's no way that you're going to know that exact parent, that exact child, that exact situation. And the idea of risk and benefit, you know, it's a dynamic situation. It's a dynamic assessment. It changes in each moment. It changes with each person. So I feel really strongly about that. And I also think, you know, the greatest sort of downstream consequence of all of this is if you actually learn how to make those assessments for yourself with the advice you have, rather than learning exactly what to do per se, you're going to feel this sense of empowerment, because you're the one who made the choice, not someone else. Again, I'm not saying like, good luck, figure it out. There's no science. There's no information. That's crazy too. That's sort of the no guilt, like do whatever, you know, which I understand. You don't want to have all these pressures, but there's some good information out there. You should look at it. You should, you know, have someone, hopefully someone like me or someone you trust, help you synthesize it, help you bounce ideas back and forth. But ultimately, you're the one in that situation with your kid. You're sitting there in that moment, or you're planning a little bit ahead in some situations, if you have a luxury of that. And you're sitting there and you're saying, I know my kid, I know me. Here's the risks I've been told about. Here are the risks I know in my family and my situation. Here are the benefits I know. I'm just going to do it. I just have to make the decision. And if you can just make a decision rather than agonize over it, you know, you're some of that guilt and that pressure and that angst, it's going to start to melt away. Which is really what I saw.
Totally. And I feel like everything that parents are going through, all this anxiety, all this stress, which the Surgeon General just made a warning about, right? Yep. Surprise. Surprise, we're all depressed.
Right.
Surprise, we're all struggling. I think a lot of that, what they mentioned, is it comes from this like social comparison, right? Mm-hmm. We're all on social media. We're all seeing what these other parents are doing. And on social media, it all feels so black and white. But what you're saying is there's actually these shades of gray.
Right. Yeah. And I found, listen, I had a lot of mixed feelings about that warning, because obviously duh, it's great. We need attention to it. But part of me was like, you know, parents, especially moms, have been saying this for a long time now, you know, and there's some really great people in the space and people in the space of policy, too, who've been shouting. It felt like, all right, like, let's jump on with the program. But even more than that, it felt like it's not just about social comparison, right? Like, yeah, that's certainly a part of it. You want, it's not, you know, you're comparing notes, you're feeling less than, that's one thing. It's a little more specific than that, I think, in the parenting space. It's just this lie that there is a right answer, that there is something you could be doing right or wrong, rather than, again, making you actually sit with your decisions and be in the moment. And I think, you know, it's all very related, but it's not so much like my kid got an A, your kid got a B on their, you know, sticker chart progress project. But, you know, like it's not quite as concrete as comparing yourself in the day-to-day things. I think it's really this erosion of confidence in your ability to live day-to-day without someone telling you what to do or someone telling you it's okay and validating it, you know, overcomplicating decisions that, you know, 20 years ago, I think just wouldn't have been decisions to think about, you know, for some of those, because we, you know, for better or worse, like sometimes we have more to agonize over now because there's more stresses and there's more science, and that's one thing. But sometimes it's people just really being told your intuition doesn't matter. I'm going to tell you how many ounces to feed your baby. I'm going to tell you how many hours of sleep your baby needs. You know, I'm just going to say this prescriptive thing without telling you why or teaching you how to follow your own, you know, your own instincts. And I think that accounts for far more of it than just, you know, comparing family photos and things like that. Is at least that's been my experience.
Definitely. And I think in your books, too, there are certain issues that you are like, no, this is black and white, like when it comes to vaccines versus like there are this, we're going to do more harm reduction. So like in taking that kind of snapshot of both of your books, what is it that you want parents to take away after reading your books? That there is those things of black and white and some things that are gray. And it's like, literally, this is the book, you know, like this is what you want to go with. And how you can listen to your gut while also paying attention to facts.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you need is you don't need nothing. Parents need some support and resources, but you don't need prescriptions. You don't need scripts. You don't need these rigid things. You need a toolkit. You know, you need something that is vetted by, you know, me or someone of the same experience and expertise, but hopefully me, because I really do think I've used a lot of experience and insight to cull through all the science and get through that initial round of overwhelm to say, again, here are the safe options. And once again, that's, you know, finding that source is a huge to-do in lowering your anxiety. So I think that will be really helpful. But then there's still additional work to do of, okay, I have all this information. How am I going to just start making decisions and be confident and be okay in that? And so it's sort of, I view this as like a partnership of, I'm not selling you a book because I can tell you how to be a parent. Honestly, there are plenty of people who claim that they can tell you exactly how to parent your kids. And I just don't agree because I'm not you. I know nothing honestly about you. I don't know your exact values. I don't know your exact style. I don't know your kid's temperament. I don't know your temperament. Are you anxious like me? And so saying, don't breastfeed, don't worry about it is helpful because it takes pressure off? Or are you actually looking for breastfeeding support and you have some people who are like not that into it in your family and you need some more information to arm you with you just need the background and the philosophy of it so that you can tweak it and how you're sort of signaling that and relaying that messaging. So again, I think the book, the, you know, both books I think are super duper helpful. But they're just an opening, a starting point for you to then say, okay, I have good information. I have kind of just like a nice framework. I got to just like go be a parent, which is like really, it's hard enough as it is, you know?
Yeah.
But you know what? It can actually be kind of joyful and fun if you just do it.
Just do it. Just dive in. Here's just your child. Take over to the hospital and keep it alive.
Yeah. Kind of and enjoy, and and shape this little kid who will listen to you sometimes and mostly not, and will be their own person. You'll give them the love they need and the basic safety things they need, and you'll create your own unique relationship. You know, you'll keep reflecting on it and trying to do better. That's great. But you'll do your version of better. You're not going to do exactly what someone else tells you to do.
Well, on that note of you specifically, not on a macro level, but on a micro level, what are two things that you wish you knew specifically?
Oh my gosh. Specifically, it's I do wish I knew about harm reduction, safe sleep. And that's a plug more for my first book than my second. But I do think it's really important. And that's because I'm really starting to dive into how binary the space is online, how you have sort of mandatory co-sleeping on one end. Let's lie to our pediatricians. Let's just like sleep. You have to sleep with your kid no matter what. It's the greatest. And then you have sort of the abstinence only, you know, I'm not going to even teach you the other way to do things. So I wish I had known that. I think it would have been important for me to just understand that that was out there. Whether or not I ended up using it or not is, you know, a different question. But just knowing that that was an open conversation would have been really helpful. And I'll give one more from my first book, but then I'll go into my second book because I'm supposed to just be, it's coming out next week. So I got to remember. It's hard. I have
so, you know,
your first child, your first book is your first baby. You have so many more memories with it. I love you too, second baby. I love you too, second book. But the first book, the breastfeeding, which we talked about, I wish I had known some specific tips about breastfeeding and establishing breastfeeding. I really didn't. And I became an exclusive pumper, which I really didn't like. But with my second, I literally took my own advice and I did this whole setup the way I outlined in my first book. And we did exclusive breastfeeding and we're still breastfeeding. Actually, she's 8 months and I really love it. So, I know.
Wait, dive more into that because like, given our imminent situation, like, I need to refresh myself. Maybe I need to reread your book too. Probably, obviously, should do that.
But I definitely am going to.
It's, you know, that's the thing. It's like, we're so mired in this conversation of, should you do breast milk? Should you do formula? Like, that's not the point. The point is breast milk is good if you can do it. It pales in comparison to the big picture, but it's great. Breastfeeding is hard, so you need support. And guess what? There's something called breastfeeding medicine. So we actually know how to set people up, you know, moms up for success. It's not 100% achievable because bodies are different and our society is deeply undersupportive. So if it doesn't work out, it has nothing to do with you. But if you have no idea what you're doing like me and just start like pumping because you're like, I need more milk, and you get into this crazy cycle and your daughter never latches and soon you're, you know, 6 months pumping until your breasts are going to fall off and you're just crying. Like, that's a disaster. That makes no sense. I had no idea of the things I could do. I didn't even know basic things like you can express colostrum before birth if you're interested. I brought it to the hospital. So when my daughter was on her hypoglycemia protocol, I could give that to her if I wanted to. It made my milk come in more quickly. My daughter latched. Some of that was luck. Some of that was I took a lactation consulting course and I learned how to latch my baby and positioning, and I avoided pumping for the first, well, I ended up basically never pumping because I don't like it, but I avoided pumping for the first month, which actually can help you establish supply. And, you know, it's very counterintuitive, but I go into the details biologically about why that happens. So again, just knowing like, listen, I'm setting myself up for success. If I still introduce some formula, if still this doesn't work out, I've at least given it the best shot possible. And I really, the biggest plot twist was I like breastfeeding and I didn't even know it was something you could like.
That's amazing. I mean, honestly, Rebecca, I'm going into this entire situation without expectations, right? Like, I have formula here. I have a pump here. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, I have no idea how this is. That's actually how I'm treating birth as well. Like, I'm going to just show up.
Yeah.
This baby's going to come out one way or the other.
When you get the baby out, the baby's going to get food. You can only prepare so much, but you might as well just set yourself up for different possibilities and stay open-minded. I think that's right.
That's, but that a lot of that comes from reading your book, right? Is it's like there are all of these different options and none, there is no shame behind any of them, right? And kind of the removal of that shame has been huge.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so important to me. And giving my second book baby a little bit of love here, another surprising thing I'm remembering, and I just think it's so interesting because it's like the things we take for granted in the parenting space. You know, I didn't really think of toilet training as optional, but it totally is. And there are plenty of people who just like don't even toilet train their kids. So I know, like, kids will kind of just learn on their own sometimes, like, honestly, most of the time. Again, it's or what we view as toilet training. So I think the second book was a lot of looking at, like, why do we say these things about the toddler ages? Like, it was explaining tantrums and separation anxiety and giving strategies, and that's all really important. But it was a lot of digging into, like, why? Why do we say that you have to sleep, your kid has to sleep in their own bed through the night? Maybe they do, maybe you want them to, maybe they don't, but is it better? Do they develop better? Do they have better sleep? Unclear, right? It's, you know, that's something where that's not a question of, in the same sentence of, you know, you should get vaccines, your kids should sleep in their own bed. Those should never be in the same sentence. The weight of that recommendation is completely ridiculous. Yeah. So yeah, just, it's very surprising when you start looking at this stuff.
Totally. And I mean, just looking, it's been wonderful to have your best friend, my best friend, Amy, like go through a lot of the same things because we can like note and compare and also look at how different our children are and that both of it, like they're both healthy kids, right? Miller will like sleep forever by himself. And, you know, I have a 4-year-old who I still need to sit with until she falls asleep, but I'm okay with that, right? Like I'm happy to do that. Do I want my second kid to sleep by themselves? Yes, I do.
Yeah, right.
And that's okay too. But yeah, it depends on how they are. Like every kid is different.
Right. And you're learning about yourself along the way too, because my husband and I always knew that sleep training or whatever you want to call it, like good sleep was essential because we don't operate well. Like we do not do well with sleep deprivation. Like it's just a weak area. And for other parents, like it's more important to feel, for example, like to feel like you're not abandoning your kid ever. If they call for you, like you go to them. That's more important than getting 8 hours of sleep, for example. And that's the point. I feel like that's what the takeaway that I keep getting from these conversations, your book, is it's about the kid primarily. And it's also about you and your husband or your partner or whatever, and what is best for your situation. Because yeah, I think Christina and I have differed in a lot of ways in how we approach parenting, but we also have a lot that is the same, like core value-wise or belief system-wise or how we want our kids to feel. And there has to be room for all of that safely and empathetically and supportively and all of these things. So we've sort of been living that, the two of us, of the reality of two people who could be a lot alike and also have a lot of differences.
Yeah. And it's so true. I love the point of it being so different, even with different kids. You could be the same. First of all, no one's ever exactly the same. People change and learn from experiences and evolve over time. But even it could have been the exact same moment in time, your kid is totally different. But it's usually a combination of you being different, the situation being different, your kid being different. I had a similar thing where I had to sleep train my oldest daughter. I also sort of thought it was mandatory, which I, you know, debunk in the book for sure. But I also was a resident going back to work at 6 weeks postpartum. So I was
no option.
Literally, like it was that or just quit, like, and not complete my residency. There was no way. So I did it. I did it in a way that worked for me, that I thought was, you know, gentle and good. And I regret zero of it. And with my second, I really struggled again with sleep deprivation and postpartum, you know, anxiety, depression again. And I thought, oh, I can't wait till I start sleep training her in a few months. And then by the time it came, things were a little better. Like I was feeling better. I had more support. I was waking up, but nursing her to sleep in the night. And I was feeling kind of well rested. My husband had leave, so we had a different schedule. And I took a nap in the morning. It was just such a different situation that I was like, I just kept putting it off. I was like, I think this is okay for right now. And it was
pressure, at least here in the U.S., right? Like, we don't have any options as women who work, right? We're expected to work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're also expected to recover in six weeks, which I think is nuts. You know, especially, you know, I went through a miscarriage last year and, you know, they were like, after 48 hours, you should be good. It took me 2 weeks to feel properly okay, to like go back to what I was used to doing. And so it made me realize that like policy just isn't set up for this. And, you know, you've been fairly vocal on your Instagram about the politics of this upcoming election and how it impacts parents and women in general. And like, what do you think some of the important issues are that we as parents, we as mothers need to be paying attention to in this election, you know, to make sure that we're all set up and future generations of women are set up for success in the way that other countries treat motherhood and, you know, postpartum?
Yeah. Well, I always, you know, remind people, because people, you know, sometimes understandably can feel, oh, you're being partisan or you're talking about politics when you're not qualified. And, you know, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir mostly, but you know, being a parent, being a mom, it's just a political act, because everything that happens in the space of public health and policy is going to affect you. It's going to, employment policies are going to affect you. Economic policies are going to affect you. Education policies. You know, we have some very hot button issues, to answer your question. I think reproductive health care and gun control are always top of mind for me, as, you know, for my patients and for myself. Having experienced pregnancy complications, miscarriage, postpartum issues, you know, also just living under the plague of gun violence in this country, I think it's impossible, if you're coming at it from a lens of a pediatrician and or a mom, not to say this is very much my lane. We need to advocate. Now, who you vote for and how you advocate is obviously up to you and your values. What I try to share is that my perspective as a pediatrician of what I see actually helping kids, like in tangible ways, is access to food, housing, healthcare, parents' access to childcare and parental leave. These, you know, obviously not having murderous gun violence in schools and in the streets, and some things that I see this day to day, and the research shows that. So that's a very evidence-based way to say those are the types of policies that actually help kids. And then my personal experience as a mom, you know, I think at every turn when I've struggled most, it's been from a lack of societal support and structures that could really help all parents. And it's really just about understanding that these things are so interconnected. So it's really about understanding how interconnected all of this is, and how you can't divorce policy from practice and reality. So however you vote, however you advocate, I think it's a really important way to demonstrate to your kids that you want to make the world better.
I want you to know, during that entire section, my child was humbling. And I like to think she was applauding. That's what it felt like. Kicks of excitement and applause for that, because I think that what you just said, like divorcing policy from practice, is impossible. And I think anyone who's saying to anyone who lives in this country, that's not your lane, keep politics out of it, or you're not, you know, this isn't your place, whatever the commentary is, that's just a lie. It's a falsehood. Because if you care about yourself, you have people that you care about in any capacity, family, like a feeling of kinship with your fellow citizen, it is your duty to be educated and understand what's going on, and understand how that might affect you. Or even if you're not a mom or you don't have kids, you know someone who's a mom. I guarantee it. You had a mom, for example. And all of these policies, like you were saying, I think that connection between what's happening and what we're voting for and what that means and what it actually looks like, it's a big leap for some people to make, but it's important to look around and think about that, of what that looks like in your day to day, whether you're seeing lots of kids through a pediatric, you know, practice or not. It still applies, I think.
Yeah, I think taking it away from the abstract, like you say, and thinking through the day to day, what would this have looked like if I had this policy in place? What would this have looked like with a different support? What would have happened if we had had a reasonable gun control measure in this situation? Just looking kind of day by day is really helpful, because that is also how you decide what matters to you. Instead of just looking at these, when someone puts a policy proposal in front of you, you know, it's not your job to analyze the policy proposal completely and get it through Congress and optimize it. I mean, you certainly can, and you can invest in that. But I think you have to decide, is this something worth fighting for? Because it will impact me and my loved ones in a positive way day to day. I think that is a thought exercise you can do with the right information. Understanding that nothing's perfect, and you're not going to, you know, you're not voting for the, you know, king or queen of the world who's going to, you're going to believe every single thing that they say and love them. And it's not about that. It's about, is there some sort of a representative on every level, you know, state, local, presidential, who is putting forward things that align with your values? And that you,
yeah, definitely. So Rebecca, we're kind of coming to the end. And so this is when I love to do this kind of moment. Is there anything that you wanted to...
There's a lot of talk about self-care and parental anxiety and mental health. And I think that's great. But try to remember that in addition to there not being any Band-Aids, it's really a noble goal to try to improve your mental health. So yes, it's hard to improve your mental health. There's not a one-size-fits-all answer, but it will benefit your kid. It's not a selfish act. It's not something that, it's not a, you know, a sum net zero sum equation where you get something so your kid gets something bad. It's exactly the opposite. You're mitigating your own anxiety will absolutely help your kid's anxiety, will be a good model to them, will let you be a better parent. So in addition to sort of saying like, hey, let's not just talk about bubble baths and showers and self-care. Let's get to some of the root causes of these things, like we talked about with policy and the information overload and other things that are really causing parental anxiety that I think we all are a part of making better. I think the other thing to remember is this is a noble mission, because it's not just for you. It's for your kids too.
Love that. Last question then is, what's next for you besides book coming out next week? Very excited. What's next and where can people find you?
What's next for me? It's a great question. I'm a little bit at a crossroads right now, having done two books. I still have a full-time job as a doctor and my second full-time job is a mama too. But I'm really I've been putting a lot of calls out to my followers and everyone wondering, how can I get good information and guidance out to people? How can I'm looking to get creative again. I used to do a lot of creative writing and essay writing, so trying to get back into that. But that sort of leads into where you can find me. I would love if you came and found me on Instagram. It's Parent Like a Pediatrician. I'm playing around with Substack. You can find me there. I have my books out, which I would love for you to check out. And generally that's where I'll be.
And parenting two adorable children.
That's right. That's my number one job, as they say.
Yeah. Well, what would be really great, just to like plant a little seed, is if you could just write a book about the next phase of our children before we get there, we could like grow up with you like we did with Taylor Swift, pretty much.
We could do teen years are coming up. Let's do preteen, prepubescent, and we could do teen years. Going to college. Can you just write about that? That would be very helpful for me.
No problem. I'm on it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca, for taking time out of your day. We really appreciate it. And this is not the last that we'll be doing together.
Of course not. I look forward to the next.
Trying our best to make do. Every day is something new, but change don't come. Oh, yes, it's true. Brighter days are straight.
Thanks for hanging out with us today. I hope you like what you heard, or if you're just like, yo, these two are my people, don't forget to hit subscribe and leave a review.
And hey, if you want to keep the combo going, come find us on Instagram at @whatiwishiknew_. We are always up for chatting about the real stuff.
We'll be back next time with more expert interviews, real life stories, and a couple of laughs. Till then, remember, we're all in this together. Bye.
Bye.
Trying our best to make